from WBUR Boston and NPR. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and this is On Point. The cost of higher education continues to rise and rise and rise, so some private colleges are trying a new way to attract students. They're slashing their sticker prices. Now, that may mean they're just making the official price match what students pay at the end after all of that financial aid and merit and scholarships. But how does it actually affect the bottom line for colleges and for American students? This hour on Point, the cost of college and the move to reduce sticker shock. And you can join us, parents and students. Are you paying your college's full official tuition, or are you paying something less? Do you find it hard to figure out what exactly your college will cost you in the end? Do you welcome this new trend? And by the way, did you ever look at a college's sticker price, a place you wanted to go or had even applied to, but in the end decided not to because of that giant number? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. And a little later this hour, we'll also take a look at how colleges are cutting their foreign language departments, why they're doing it, and why we should care. But first, let's start with this sticker price story. And joining us from New York is Anya Kamenetz. She's education correspondent for NPR, author of several books on higher ed, including Generation Debt. She'll also be launching a new NPR podcast called Life Kit for Parents next month. Anya, welcome to On Point.
Thank you so much for having me, Meghna.
It's great to have you. Okay, so first of all, you know, college tuition and financing is a pretty complicated thing. So let's just kind of go through some basics here. When we're talking about colleges slashing sticker prices, what exactly are we saying?
Right. So I think most people may be aware that the price that the college advertises is not the same price that everyone pays. We have dynamic pricing, and colleges usually make some effort to meet family needs as far as income and to be, you know, if not need blind, then at least need aware. So we know that there's financial aid, there's government financial aid. The phenomenon we're talking about now is after decades and decades of raising prices much faster than the rate of inflation, sometimes twice the rate of inflation, there's a small number of colleges, according to this Washington Post story yesterday, 23 private colleges out of almost 1,700 that have slashed their sticker price. And so the asking price, the opening bid in the auction, if you will, is going down, sometimes quite significantly.
Yeah, and indeed, this story did appear in the Washington Post, and we've got a link to that at onpointradio.org. How long has this been going on, though? Is this kind of a new thing in the past year, or is this something that colleges, some, a small number granted, have been thinking about for some time as they try to stay competitive also?
Well, so I think that there's a number of trends that are kind of converging here. For one thing, you know, obviously, even colleges are subject to the laws of economic gravity, right? So things that go up and up and up eventually do have to come down. And colleges are contending with a number of different factors right now. There's been a 9% decline in enrollment overall since starting in 2010. So there's just fewer students than there used to be. Part of that is demographics. Part of it is employment trends. You know, we've had a pretty strong economy. Lower unemployment means fewer people looking to go back to school. In the last couple of years, that's been joined by issues around international students. So there's been two year-over-year declines in international student enrollment. And that is significant, especially for these private colleges. And that's because international students, they don't get federal student aid. A lot of them are not eligible for institutional aid as either. They are members of a global elite that pays full price for the prestige of an American private school education. And so when those students dry up, that's a big loss of revenue for some colleges.
I see. Okay. But let's get sort of down to a basic question here, Anya. I mean, if we're talking about slashing sticker price for tuition, et cetera, but that in reality already most students don't pay that full sticker price anyway, is there is there an actual difference at the end of the day in what students will be paying at some of these colleges that are doing this?
Okay, so across all private colleges, the discount rate is about 50%. So there's a small percentage of students, about 1 in 10 who pay the full price, and then 90% of people that get a discount, of those in their freshman year, they're usually paying half price. That's the average. So Bottom line, most colleges, by cutting their tuition even significantly, they're not necessarily changing their revenue or their yield per student. In fact, it may be going up because they may change the types of students they attract. What we're changing here then is really more about transparency in pricing. It's more about the negotiation that goes on. And if you think about like the steeplechase that a freshman or a prospective freshman and their family has to go through to get from, you know, looking at colleges, figuring out which one they want, applying for financial aid, comparing financial aid packages from one college to the next. Really what this move is about, I think, is making it more transparent from the outset exactly where you might end up instead of forcing students to go through all those hoops.
Right. Okay. So this is a really important point because we've got a listener on Twitter who reached out to us, someone saying Trinity Prez, who says, this is not a solution. The prices are still very high, which is where tuition discounting becomes important. The real question is, can we control expenses to actually price at a level that's sustainable? What do you think?
Well, the question of what's sustainable is a really huge one in higher ed. You know, the universe of colleges that we're talking about here are private colleges. They're not subsidized in the same way. Their economics have always been very different. Public colleges are far less expensive, although they're still, you know, unaffordable and out of reach for many, many students. So, you know, making, you know, truly cutting the cost of delivery of higher education is something that has been very elusive, and attempts to do it through things like, you know, automation or increased use of computers or increasing class sizes, they always tend to be perceived as diluting the quality at the same time. So thinking about if there's a way to actually deliver a quality education at a much lower price is something that, frankly, not that many higher education institutions are focusing on.
Okay. Well, Anya Kamenetz, stand by here for just a second. Anya is the education correspondent for NPR. I want to actually turn now to the president of a college that's doing this, that has slashed its sticker price. Panayotis Kanellos is joining us now from Annapolis, Maryland. He's the president of St. John's College. President Kanellos, welcome to On Point.
Hello, Magna. Thank you so much for having me. This is a very important conversation for us to be having today.
It is. So walk us through a little bit of the thinking that St. John's went through in slashing its tuition or the number that it puts before students. How much was it and how far down did it go?
Well, the story begins at about in fall of 2017, actually, when we were having our annual meeting to discuss our tuition increase or our proposed tuition increase for the following year. At that time, we were at about $52,000 a year for tuition. That's not including room and board. Mm-hmm. And we had been increasing our tuition, like most colleges, by approximately 3% year after year. Mostly just trying to keep up with the rising cost of things affiliated with running the institution. But we just had one of these moments where we just asked a question, and we asked this question. We said, if we continue raising our tuition 3% a year from $52,000, where will we be in a decade? What is that going to mean for us? And we realized that we would be over $70,000 a year. And that was just a sobering moment for us. We said, is that who we are? Is that what we aspire to be? Is that thinking about how far away that tuition price is pulling from what most families make, what most families can afford? And so we asked a follow-up question. And this began as a kind of hypothetical. At St. John's, we really love asking questions that take us sometimes down rabbit holes, but this one actually proved profitable. We said, what if rather than moving in 10 years to $70,000, we moved our tuition back 10 years, back a decade, to where it was before many of the increases of the past decade had been incurred? Where would we be? What would that price point be? And it was about $35,000, about half of that 70. And this just started us on a process of thinking about what that would mean for our institution. Mm-hmm. What would it mean if we moved back to $35,000? Is it sustainable? And ultimately, after quite a lot of discussion, conversation, and introspection, we decided to make that move.
Yeah. So President Kanellos, if I may ask, was this – well, let me just – is does St. John's College risk, by making this move, reducing the actual revenues it's collecting from tuition, room, and board?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I mean, it's possible that revenues, tuition revenues, can be reduced. But, You know, one thing, this move for us was part of a larger sort of strategy that we decided to employ looking forward. I know a lot of colleges think of a tuition reduction as a kind of, you know, one-time occurrence, a kind of shot in the arm. And that is not at all what we were interested in. I mean, we're a college in a safe harbor. We're financially stable. Mm-hmm. We've had record applications for years running. We have a phenomenally successful capital campaign underway. So we weren't sort of thinking about that side of it. We were thinking, you know, more about where we want to end up.
Yeah.
And so it's possible. But what we decided to do was have this tuition reduction be part of a larger strategy to come up with a new financial model for our college.
I want to jump in here for a second because I want to talk about that sort of future financial model in a second. We got to take a break here in a minute or two. But I keep thinking of something that Anya said, that when it comes to the actual amount that students themselves may be paying, is there a difference here? Because Anya had said earlier that, you know, we're talking about the optics of sticker prices to a certain degree. And, you know, St. John's has dropped its tuition. But if a lot of students weren't even paying the full amount to begin with, at the end of the day, has what they're putting out of pocket changed at all?
For some students, yes. For others, not as much. But the long-term strategy is to move towards affordability and accessibility. So that's the goal. It's just not a light switch you can turn on or off. And so you have to look at this kind of moving forward over time.
Okay. So we'll talk more about sort of what those steps may be when we come back from a quick break. We're talking this hour about some private colleges considering slashing their sticker prices in the era of continuing rising rates for higher education. You're listening to Panayotis Kanellos. He's the president of St. John's College. And Anya Kamenetz joins us as well. She's education correspondent for NPR. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/onpoint. That's Indeed.com/onpoint. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking this hour about a small but perhaps growing number of private colleges who are considering slashing their sticker prices, why they're doing it, and what it means for the colleges themselves, and of course, for students as well. And I'm joined this hour by Panayotis Kanellos. He's president of St. John's College. They've done exactly this. They've cut back their sticker prices rather significantly. Anya Kamenetz joins us as well. She's education correspondent for NPR and author of Generation Debt as well. So Anya, just jump back in here because we were hearing President Kanellos before the break talking about the reasons why St. John's wanted to move their tuition back to what it was a couple of years ago. What do you think of what they've done?
Well, it's really interesting, right? Because, you know, just listening to the president go through his thought process, you know, there's so much in this that's really about signaling and it's about values, right? So colleges are not consumer product companies. They are selling an experience. They're selling prestige. They're selling something that's supposed to be a credential that travels with you throughout your life. And so the price is really part of that signaling process. And I think for a lot of colleges for a long time, they've been kind of trapped by that because there's an anchoring effect. You know, the colleges, the Ivy League schools at the top of the heap, they charge the most money. And if you are a college that charges a lot of money, you're trying to put yourself in that category. If you're a college that charges less money, you have to make a case based on the value of an education. And that can be a practical case, but it doesn't really partake of the same prestige and the same kind of glory that having the top flight or the top notch luxury education does. And so how does a college say, I'm going going to actually go and charge less. And it's not because I'm in financial trouble. It's because I want to be fair. I want to be committed to access. And I want to give students enough without it being excessive. I think that actually is a very difficult message to send. And it's a complex message to send for colleges considering making this choice.
Right. So, President Kanellis, you were saying earlier how you and your colleagues at St. John's were asking yourselves, is this who we are? Is this who we want to be? I mean, had St. John's felt that pressure, that sort of the race to ever more expensive tuitions for the reasons that Anya was talking about, that we have a bunch of very well-known elite schools that are kind of setting this tone, like if you have a certain sticker price, it means a great education, whether or not that's actually true?
I really appreciate what Anya just said. I think she's spot on. In our case, it was really our values were not aligned with our sticker price. I mean, we are a great books college. We are college unplugged. We have small classes. We sit around a table. We discuss big ideas. You know, we're very distinctive. We have campuses in Annapolis and Santa Fe. We're a kind of back to basics sort of school. And the idea that we would have a kind of luxury prestige price for the sort of education that we offered, I think it skewed perhaps the way other people thought of us. And I think it has a warping effect on how you see yourselves. And so we want to align our tuition price with our values. We want to be open and available to everybody who wants to be a Johnny.
Hmm. Well, let's go to some callers here. Let's go to Sarah, who's calling from Concord, Massachusetts. Sarah, you're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call. I really appreciate this discussion. My husband and I are both advanced degree college graduates, but we're first generation, and we've worked really hard and have wanted to give our children a college education that was a valuable one. And we are sending our kids to private colleges and paying for each of those children $60,000 a year tuition. One of my daughters has already graduated, and so we've paid $240,000 for her education, and now we're educating a second one. And I feel that it's such a burden on us. It's a choice that we're making, and we're very proud of being able to give that. But we pay for every penny of my kids' education, and it's a real stress on our family finances. We're both working very hard. We would not be considered the 1%, the top 5%. But I feel like we've been told we don't fit in the demographics of getting financial aid, and the sport we're our kids are getting sports scholarships. But we in some ways feel that $60,000 a year is supporting that sports industry of college, and the financial aid package. And we would really love a break of having. We're not looking for an elite college. We're not looking for a price to brag to people. We're our kids are there because of the academics.
Yeah.
We're not there because of the luxury or the right to brag about it. We love the college. Academics.
Well, Sarah, thank you so much for your call. Anya, let me turn back to you on this, because I think a question that Sarah's story raises in my mind is it seems as if with every passing year we have the numbers of middle class families, even upper middle class families who are no longer qualifying for as much financial aid as they feel as if we need. It seems to be growing here. Is that mm-hmm. is that part of mm-hmm. the pressures or perhaps the reasons why some of these colleges say, well, okay, well, if we're gonna make it affordable or make it accessible for this growing number of families, we ought to drop our sticker prices as well.
Well, yes. I mean, this mother is the voice of a vast percentage of Americans who are caught by trends that are moving out of sync, right? So family incomes have not been growing at the same rate as the cost of education. The cost of college tuition, along with a few other things like specialized medical procedures, are the highest in terms of how much they've grown since the 1970s. They're far out of sync with regular inflation and many other necessities that households need to buy. And so with the increasing polarization of incomes and tuition growing year after year after year, there's many more people that are kind of caught in between and kind of falling into into that widening gap. And, you know, the reasons that college tuition have grown are really complex. Mm-hmm. It's similar to medical care in the sense that, yes, there's a lot of government subsidy that kind of muddies the waters. There's not necessarily competition in terms of outsourcing. You don't see a lot of automation in this area. And so tuition rises for real reasons. I mean, the cost of what the president is speaking about, having a few people sit around a table, that is the same fundamental model that we've had, you know, for centuries in higher education. And it doesn't get any cheaper,
right?
So in that way, you know, there's some things that you can't change. But figuring out a way to subsidize it such that it's available to everyone who's able to take advantage of it is something that we just haven't tackled as a country.
Well, so President Canales, let me ask you about that, because, you know, we did want to talk more about what it's going to take to build a sustainable financial model for the future. As Anya points out, should we start looking more at sort of the fundamental inefficiencies that are built into how on-campus higher ed works today? I mean, we're living in an era where perhaps online education is becoming more of a factor for college students. Is St. John's looking at fundamental changes to how it operates?
Oh, gosh, no. We are fully committed to the model that we have of, as Anya rightly points out, very expensive in-person, face-to-face, conversational education, and figuring out how to meet the needs of Sarah, the caller, these families who are getting stuck in that ever-widening gap between those who are granted financial aid and those who, you know, can write a check without worrying about it. I mean, that's the great majority of college-bound families today. And, you know, in our case, I mean, our education is very expensive. It costs us $60,000 per year to educate a student, $60,000 mm-hmm. a year, because we have, 140 faculty for under 900 undergraduates, you know, classes of 15 students, some with two faculty members in the classroom. And what we did in sort of thinking about how to make our education accessible and affordable without compromising the quality of what we had to offer was we decided to foreground philanthropy and put that at the center of our financial model. If you think about a college's finances as being a sort of pyramid, and at the base of the pyramid, the widest part traditionally has been tuition revenue, and then above that, room and board, maybe some auxiliary revenue. And at the very top is philanthropy. Mm-hmm. And so what we decided to do was invert that pyramid and raise enough money that we would be a philanthropy-centered institution so that the top, the philanthropic component of our institution, would be driving down towards affordability right. and making tuition more accessible.
So is that how, I mean, if you said it costs $60,000 per year to educate a St. John's student and the new sticker price of tuition fees, room and board for St. John's is what, $49,000, but students would actually be paying around $25,000 each. Is the difference is coming from the philanthropy you're talking about?
Absolutely.
So that's quite a bit. I mean, that's more than 50%.
Yep, absolutely, and that's what we're committed to. And we're off to just an amazing start. We, you know, before we embarked upon this, we surveyed our own alumni because we knew we could only go down this path if we had the support of our own community. And we had over 1,000 alumni surveyed. And we said, you know, if we were to be a philanthropy-centered institution, would you support us? And they resoundingly said yes. And they wanted us to lower our tuition. And they've responded tremendously. We just announced our campaign in September. And we've raised almost $200 million of our $300 million goal already.
Wow.
And, you know, when we as we get closer to that goal, we're going to see the effects upon, our ability to provide assistance to students from here forward.
Right. So laudable, certainly, but also risky, is it not? I mean, you're relying on your alumni to be able to have the pockets to provide the philanthropy. And also, I mean, we're all subject to the vagaries of recessions as well.
Absolutely. I mean, we had confidence going forward. I mean, we received two $25 million gifts towards the beginning of the campaign and then a $50 million matching gift from the Winiarski Foundation at the very beginning, the day we launched. So we knew that the resources were there. Our community was waiting for us to come up with a model that they felt that they wanted to respond to.
Mm. Okay, well, President Canellos and Anya Kamenetz, hang on here for just a second because I want to bring someone else into the conversation. Jeff Salingo joins us now from Washington. He's a contributing editor at The Atlantic and a senior fellow at the Arizona State University Design Institute and former editor of the Chronicle of Higher Education. Jeff Salingo, welcome to you.
It's great to be here, Magda.
Okay, so we've been hearing a lot of very positive conversation around this idea of colleges, a few number of them, slashing their sticker prices. Do you feel as positive about it?
Well, I think there's a lot more window dressing and public relations that are happening with a lot of these tuition resets, as they're often called. I think that, as Anya pointed out, it's a lot about price transparency and mm-hmm. trying to differentiate yourself in a very crowded marketplace. I think, you know, in many ways, St. John's College is kind of an outlier because they're a distinctive college in terms of their academic program. So they probably don't have to do it from a price point standpoint. So they might be a little different in this situation. But I think most of the colleges that were pointed out in that Washington Post piece are really doing it because there's not much else they can do at this point to differentiate themselves in a place where there's, you know, hundreds and hundreds of private colleges.
So, but tell me more. I mean, why do you see it as window dressing?
Well, in many ways, as Anya pointed out, you know, the average tuition discount price, the average tuition discount right now is about 50%. So really who these tuition resets are helping are those few students who pay full price, and at many of these colleges, it may be, you know, a dozen or fewer students, or those students kind of paying between the discounted, you know, the average discount price and the full price, right? So it's mostly helping higher income students who in many cases might be paying more of the full sticker price. It's not necessarily helping affordability. The other thing that, and we haven't really talked about it, is it affects tuition. So many of these places are residential colleges where students live and eat on campus, and it doesn't affect the room and board. And some of these colleges are actually making a margin on room and board. In other words, they're making a profit on room and board. And so it doesn't reduce that price.
Okay, interesting. So mostly helping higher income students, but there are families out there who, I mean, we've heard from them on this show in over time who say, well, you see the sticker price and perhaps, you know, that's enough to thwart them away from even considering a school. If there's greater price transparency now, isn't that a good thing? Because then people know, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it is. And you know, and the government has done, I think, a tremendous job in the last decade to try to bring price transparency. They now require these net price calculators on every college website, which you can put in kind of your family income and you can get a sense of what you might pay. You know, this is obviously upfront and you get to see it and everybody pays the full price. It's unlike getting on an airplane where you have no idea. You know, the person paid next to you paid twice as much. And it's the same thing right now where you don't, when you don't have this price transparency. I mean, at the end of the day, though, what I would worry about also is that, you know, it's, as Anya pointed out earlier, it's not necessarily bringing in more revenue for these schools unless they get a ton more students out of this deal. And at the end of the day, it's the revenue that pays for faculty and academic programs and buildings, right? They still need cash on hand in order to pay for those things. And so if they're not going to increase their revenue over time, it actually may end up hurting students because they're not going to have as great of an academic experience or social experience or residential experience.
Well, Anya Kamenetz, jump back in here then, because we may perhaps, are we in a situation where we might see a year or two of these reduced sticker prices, but then as Jeff, you know, was echoing what you were saying earlier, the revenue demands will still be there. So could basically the prices will still be going up?
Well, look, I mean, again, this is a small, perhaps a bellwether, but a very small group of colleges that's pursuing this strategy. And the broader strategy in higher ed has been raise the prices until the pig squeals, right? There's no end in sight to tuition increases seemingly over generations now. And unless there's a broader kind of sense that no, families are not going to pay this anymore, and they began indeed to choose other options, cheaper options, even if they are lower cost, even if they are lower quality, you know, we're already seeing that. We're seeing middle class middle-class families trading in the four-year college for the two-year college, choosing to live at home for longer, and relying increasingly on the public institutions versus private. And so and let's not forget again that enrollment is going down. So, you know, whatever pricing strategy these institutions choose to pursue, there's going to be winners and losers. But I think the overall picture of the marketplace is a much broader shakeout where, in fact, many colleges might close.
Okay. So, Jeff Salinga, what do you think about that?
Yeah, I think that's very true, right? I think a lot of these schools are kind of grasping at strategies to, again, try to differentiate themselves in this marketplace to try to grow enrollment at a time when the demographics of this country are changing drastically. You know, many of these colleges who are doing the tuition resets are in the Northeast and the Midwest, where the number of high school graduates is expected to decline over the next decade, and at the second half of next decade, really take a big drop. And so they're trying to do anything to kind of sustain themselves for the future. But I think we are going to see a large shakeout, and we're already seeing that, right? We saw Hampshire College recently talk about finding strategic partners. We've seen a lot of mergers and some closures in the Boston area, and I think we're going to see more of those in the next couple of years.
Well, Jeff Salinga, Panayotis Kanellos, and Anya Kamenetz, stand by for a second. We've got to take a quick break. We're talking about a small group of private colleges considering or moving forward with slashing their sticker prices, as Anya's been saying. Small number, but perhaps they're a bellwether of how colleges and universities are trying to grapple with the ever-rising costs of higher education. This is On Point.
Did you kill Marlene Johnson?
I think you're one of the first people to have actually asked.
From WBUR and ZSP Media, this is Beyond All Repair, a new podcast about an unsolved murder that will leave you questioning everything.
Somebody should be in jail for murdering my sister.
A woman who's never been believed.
As long as they think I have done this, then they're not looking for who actually did this.
And that's what makes it a cold case.
No, it's a botched case.
And a search for the truth, once and for all.
Wow, it just gets more interesting.
Beyond All Repair. Listen and follow wherever you get your podcasts.
Be careful. You're digging in a place that's been very peaceful for a while.
Do it anyway. Dig.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking this hour about a small number of private colleges in the United States that are actually slashing their sticker prices, dropping the published price of tuition, room, and board for a bunch of complicated reasons. It's a small group right now, but are they a bellwether for how colleges and universities are trying to grapple with soaring, ever-soaring rates of how much it costs for students to go through and get a college degree? I'm joined this hour by Anya Kamenetz. She's education correspondent for NPR and also author of Generation Debt. Panayotis Kanellos joins us as well. He's president of St. John's College. They've done this. They've slashed their tuition, room, and board rates. And Jeff Salinga is with us as well. He's contributing editor at The Atlantic and former editor of The Chronicle of Higher Education. And we've got a lot of comments coming in online here. A couple here from Twitter. Jason Logan Cooper writes, "This move will accompany a massive reduction in financial aid, and the result will be fewer lower-income kids getting the opportunity to study at these schools." And Frederica Keating says, "Right now, those who pay sticker price are the wealthy ones. So will they be the only ones benefiting from this reduction? Is that good?" A couple interesting questions there. But let's go to our phone lines. And Linda's calling from Portland, Oregon. Linda, you're on the air.
Yes, we are. Hi. We have a senior in high school who is applied to 12 colleges. She's a phenomenal student. And our biggest challenge is that we're in the same boat as the previous caller and in that little middle bracket where we're not going to likely get financial aid but don't necessarily have unending means to be able to pay for whatever school she wants to go to. So we've had a lot of conversations about the value of an education and value of undergraduate and graduate school in her case she's likely to go. So we've reached out. Of those 12 schools, three of them are in Canada. Mm. And I don't know exactly what Canada is doing differently, but their prices are significantly different. And they have some phenomenal schools. So she is seriously considering those. But she's also like an Ivy League caliber kid. And it's hard to tell her that she should play it down to a school that might give her more merit aid, and because she's not going to be able to afford to go to the higher tier school. So it's a difficult situation, and I feel bad for her because she's kind of caught in the middle.
Well, Linda, thank you so much for your call. We've got kind of a comment on our website that echoes what Linda says. Deb Hull, BH, says, if other countries can educate their people for $5,000 to $7,000 a year, why can't we, the wealthiest country in the world, do the same? Jeff Salingo, how would you respond to that and to the caller as well?
Well, we have a much different market in the U.S. Compared to the rest of the world. I mean, Canada, yes, has first of all, it has many more public institutions than private institutions. Most students there go to public institutions, and they have much bigger undergraduate populations. You know, the top four public institutions in Canada educate something like 130,000 undergraduates. You know, and most of our prestigious colleges and universities are mostly private here in the U.S., and they, you know, educate a fraction of that number. I mean, not to downplay the concerns of these callers, but you know, there are many colleges out there. The most elite and selective colleges in this country have dedicated a lot of their money to financial aid, particularly not only for low income students, but also for moderate and middle income students. You know, there are choices of public universities in many of these states that have lower prices in some cases than even the discounted prices of private universities. I think people need to look at the choices that they have and look at the prices, the net prices they're going to end up paying, and try to take a little bit of the emotion, well, I really want to go to this school and who cares what it costs. And I think that if we balance those cost and emotion a little bit more, I think that people might have more choices that are a little bit more in tune with what they could pay.
Right. So President Kennell's Anya, go ahead.
Well, I just want to reinforce that message that there's tons of research out there that elite and prestigious colleges do not make a material difference in terms of your income, in terms of your intangibles, how likely you are to be thriving in your life. It's a choice that looms super huge at this point in a person's life. But down the road, you know, what you'll want to look back on and say, do I have a crippling amount of debt? Was I at a college where I was able to pursue the things that were most interesting to me? And did I work hard to get the most out of college?
Yeah. Well, you know, President Kennell, what I wanted to do also is dig in a little deeper into sort of the fundamentals of what colleges and universities offer in the United States and whether, you know, if we're going to make it financially sustainable for both them and especially the students who are going to these colleges, we have to rethink that. I mean, St. John's might be an outlier here, but broadly speaking, do we need more institutions to start looking at, are they offering too many majors? Are they building too many new amenities? Are the trappings of what we consider to be now the basic expectations of an on-campus college experience, are they part of what's driving the unsustainability here?
I think it's likely that's true. I will say one of the reasons that we've been able to be successful in offering what we offer and you know, maintaining the quality of our education as one of the most rigorous colleges in America is that, you know, we have avoided the amenities arms race. You know, we don't have the climbing wall. We don't even have a swimming pool. We have a great old-fashioned 50s gym and not so fancy food or dormitories and no sports teams. And that enables us to take those resources that we do get from through philanthropy, through tuition and otherwise, and channel them right back into the classroom. And, you know, I mean, that's what higher education should be about in the end. It should not be about the trappings. It should be about the core experience.
Jeff Salingo, what do you think?
I definitely think that's true. And, you know, and there's been a lot of press about the climbing walls and the lazy rivers. But at the essence of why college prices have increased the way they have over the last couple of decades is what Anya brought up earlier, right? We are essentially teaching students the same way we've taught them for decades, even for centuries, right? One teacher or professor at the front of the room, you know, whether there's 10 people in the room or 20 people in the room, the more people, more students you could put in a room, the less the cost of that education. And we haven't talked about, you know, maybe we need to do more hybrid education, right? And a lot of colleges are experimenting with this, where they do a little bit online and a little bit face-to-face. You know, maybe there's options for low residential models, right, where students kind of combine work and learning. Maybe we need to reduce the number number of academic majors at some places, or moved to the model of the work college with Paul Quinn College in Texas is experimenting with, where students work at the college while they're attending classes, which also reduces, obviously, the number of staff you need. So there's other models that I think we need to start to look at, to look at the actual cost, rather than just look at these pricing schemes that in the end, I think, are mostly window dressing.
Yeah. Well, let's go to Katie, who's calling from East Moline, Illinois. You're on the air, Katie.
Hi. I wanted to talk about the ripple-down effect of all those high prices. I graduated in 2012. I was a very good student, had a 3.8, applied for a lot of scholarships. I went to a private small university, still graduated with $25,000 in debt. And now I am unable to even consider making a donation to my college, mm-hmm. even though that they're asking on a regular basis. But not only am I in no financial situation to make a donation, but the cost of the college didn't equal out to what I felt I gained. And so among my peers, many of us feel we don't owe our colleges anything. We already gave them a massive amount of money. I'm going to be in debt for the next 10 years of my life. And donating is so low down on my priority list. I don't see it happening in the future for me, even if I were to get a more profitable job.
Yeah. Well, Katie, thank you for your call. President Canellos, I'm going to turn back to you on that, because earlier you were telling us how your alumni have stepped up to make St. John's really a philanthropy-driven organization. But how would you respond to Katie, who I'm going to guess is echoing the voices of other college grads out there who may not feel the same sense of loyalty to their institutions of higher education?
Yeah, well, I empathize with her. I think, when we think about affordability, we're thinking not only about families that are sending daughters and sons to our college, but we're thinking about our graduates as well. It is quite an obstacle to enter your professional life with a significant amount of debt. And so colleges have to think about that piece of the puzzle as well, how to become affordable, not simply while someone's in college, but to make it possible for students to not have to borrow so much money through the process. I think I she has a wonderful point, and I hope at some point she will feel differently as she moves into a career and sees the value of the education that she has, and the light might shine differently on that experience that she had earlier. But I certainly understand where she is now.
Hmm. Well, Jeff and Anya, we've just got about a minute here left to go, and I will give you a chance to share your last thoughts with us. Jeff, you first. I mean, window dressing or not, is it not significant, though, that we have some colleges trying to think very far outside or farther outside the box on how to get a handle on this tuition problem?
Yes, and I think it does a great job for those parents and students, many of them who are calling or commenting on Twitter today, who want more transparency. And I think at the end of the day, this does give people a better sense that the kid next to them is not getting a better deal than they are, because everyone is essentially paying the same price. And if that encourages colleges to have more transparency in pricing, then I do applaud these tuition resets for that reason.
And Anya, we've got about a minute left here. Your last thought.
Well, I really want to speak to what Katie brought up, which is the generational effects of college tuition increases and student debt. So in the mid-90s, borrowers went from less than half of all college graduates to what we have today, which is two-thirds. And if you can trace birth rates going down very, very closely with the rise of student debt. And so when you have parents from late Generation X and now even millennial parents who have their own student loans, with kids now going into college, it becomes really clear that there's a knock-on effect that really is affecting many generations of Americans in terms of not only their ability to access higher education, but also to take full advantage of it once they do. And so clearly something has to change. Yeah. And, if this is a bellwether, it's something that is, clearly a marker of something that needs to change.
Yeah, definitely an anchor that's very difficult to shake loose. Well, Anya Kamenetz, education reporter for NPR, author of Generation Debt, and launching a new NPR podcast, Life Kit for Parents, next month. I'm going to hit subscribe on that, Anya. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much, Magna.
And Panayotis Kanellos, president of St. John's College. It was a pleasure to speak with you, President Kanellos. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks to everybody involved in this conversation.
And Kanellos, I should say. I'm going to get that right, President Kanellos. And Jeff Salingo, contributing editor for The Atlantic and former editor of the Chronicle of Higher Ed. It was great to have you. Thank you as well, Jeff.
Thank you.
All right. Well, speaking of the Chronicle of Higher Education, while we were doing our research around this issue of sticker prices for colleges and universities, we actually came across a really interesting story in the Chronicle of Higher Ed, and it relates to what we've been talking about. The story is headlined, "Colleges Lose a Stunning 651 Foreign Language Programs in 3 Years." We've got a link to it at onpointradio.org. Stephen Johnson, staff reporter at the Chronicle of Higher Ed, wrote the story, and he joins me now from Washington. Stephen, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Magna. Thanks for having me.
Okay, so 651 foreign language programs in 3 years being cut from colleges. To tell us more, what's going on?
Right. So that's a net loss. We spoke with Dennis Looney at the Modern Language Association, and really no one has more thorough data going back decades on enrollment in foreign language programs. But this is the first time they've started to measure the actual number of those programs. From 2009 to 13, they found that the number of those programs was essentially unchanged. Colleges were offering overall, on the whole, the same number of programs that they were from that 2009 to 13 period. But from 2013 to 2016, they've just processed that data. They found that that net loss was 651 programs. So now there are 651 fewer language programs that colleges are offering students.
Wow. So, I mean, after 9/11, though, we had a big boost in the number of foreign language offerings in colleges and universities because there was this thought that we needed to be more plugged in to the rest of the world. But after 2013, what's going on here? Is it the enrollment drops we've been talking about through this hour? Is it that these were departments that were targeted because of cost issues? Why so many foreign language programs cut?
It's a bit of both, and the causes are a bit up in the air for debate. But what's definitely irrefutable is that there's a decline in both enrollments in foreign languages and in the number of programs that are being offered. The decline in enrollment started earlier. So shortly after the recession, the MLA also showed that there has been a decline since 2009. But in that same period, it's been about a 15% decline in enrollments in foreign language courses. That can be a kind of chicken-egg situation. If fewer students are taking those programs, then colleges, which are really strained in their budgets, might look at those programs to cut them.
Okay, so I'm seeing here in your reporting that there is Spanish, which still accounts for half of the enrollments in languages other than English. They net loss of 118 programs around colleges around the country. French down 129, German 86. But there's some growth, right, in what, Korean, Biblical Hebrew, and American Sign Language?
Right. Those are the only three languages among the top 15 most commonly taught that the MLA found net increases in programs.
Okay. So what's been the reaction to this? I mean, who's concerned about this precipitous drop in foreign language programs in American colleges?
Certainly everyone in the foreign language education field and the humanities more generally has obviously worried about being targeted for cuts. There's often been a perception that humanities have been designated more explicitly for cuts since the recession. But there's also some evidence that foreign language has taken the heat even more so. There was a 2014 report, too, that showed that colleges cut degree-granting programs in foreign languages almost twice as much as they did other humanities degrees.
Is there any sign that this trend will decrease? Because, I mean, you were talking about how humanities programs are concerned about their viability and the importance of STEM programs keeps continuing to rise, or the focus on STEM programs keeps rising.
Sure. As students look more to practicality and to professional-style degrees, there's still a place for languages there, of course, and there's a lot of debate about how professionalized language programs should be. But another point for optimism is that state spending on higher education, which can be one of the most important factors determining what programs are cut, that's increasing again. There's a recent report that this most recent fiscal year, state spending has increased again. So that's one area for optimism. But in the meantime, the MLA expects the number of language programs to possibly keep falling.
Wow. Well, Stephen Johnson, staff reporter for the Chronicle of Higher Education, he wrote a story headlined, "Colleges Lose a Stunning 651 Foreign Language Programs in 3 Years." We've got a link to that at onpointradio.org. Stephen, thank you so very much.
Thank you very much.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.